Welcome to Episode 5 of Bibliotech, the podcast about emerging technologies for academics. In this episode, I take a look at academia and what it might look like in the year 2515. The future is sure to bring change to the higher education sector. But can we really predict what post-secondary education will look like at that time? The answer is, of course, no. But that doesn't stop me from dishing out what I think it might look like.
The future can be found in many places. In my view of the future, the novelty will wear off. The instrument will grow light, convenient and familiar to every hand. A common tool within the means of every factory, business, every home.
I've recently returned from a conference called Internet Librarian, which is held every year in Monterey, California. It's a meeting of tech-savvy librarians who share their discoveries, triumphs, and this year, even their failures. One of the sessions featured a series of prominent thinkers in librarianship considering what libraries will look like in 2515. Some of their predictions. With so much connection and so much information, libraries in the distant future will be places to disconnect, to reduce the digital noise and concentrate. Some thought there would be no need for libraries by 2515. Of course, it's notoriously difficult to predict the future even 5 years out, let alone 500 years. 500-year predictions are pretty much impossible. But I found it an intriguing idea, so I thought I'd give it a try. So, what will higher education and academic libraries look like in 2515? First, some perspective. 500 years ago, the printing press was still revolutionizing Europe. We're 7 years from the 500th anniversary of the year Martin Luther nailed his theses to the chapel door in Wittenberg, which started the first ideological revolution, fueled by the European printing press. If we imagine we are at just such a point, which many suggest we are, where a new breed of communication technology is starting a cascade that impacts every element of our society and culture, it's clear just how impossible it is to predict 500 years into the future. The monks complaining about information overload in the 16th century because of the sheer volume of new books and broadsheets being produced were probably not able to imagine something like the internet, let alone anticipate and predict it. But I think we can nod in their direction and remember that the moral crises and impossibilities of the moment will probably sound ridiculous in 500 years. I imagine what I would say to those 16th century monks, with my iPad in one hand and a mobile phone in the other. You ain't seen nothing yet, friar. To set the stage, it's one thing to just project where the technology might go and presume it's greater than we can imagine presently. It seems to me that we need to account for the inevitable environmental and economic apocalypse that will likely occur between now and 2515. I'm not an environmental scientist, but as I understand it, in 500 years, we will likely have no more fossil fuels, and we will probably have exhausted all the key precious metals currently employed in high-tech manufacturing. So to extrapolate on our current computing culture, which is based on plastics and disposable, replaceable devices, is probably short-sighted. And not only that, air travel would likely become prohibitively expensive. We'd be driving less, if at all. We might be moving from a culture constantly in transit to one dependent on its neighborhoods and immediate environs. How would that shift impact universities? Can we sustain populations of 40, 50, 60, or over 70,000 student staff and faculty? Might we be forced to embrace distance education and digital curriculum and stop building massive lecture halls? Maybe you'd look out on a sea of digital faces as you lecture. Maybe you just look into a tiny camera. Maybe, instead of digital lectures, we'd break out universities into smaller, neighborhood-friendly pieces and have small seminar classes held in coffee shops and local libraries. Maybe your students will be digitally beamed into a lecture hall or seminar room. Maybe there will be no more lecturing at all. Potentially, the costs of personal communication technology will rise as well. Presumably, computing devices could be made from recycled materials, but I would expect the cost of devices to rise in any case. Would this create a second digital divide? Would masses of people who once had access lose it? Can we not increase our use of digital technology because it would be too expensive to purchase? While many predict growing rates of technology adoption, could environmental issues actually result in the opposite being true? Would the university be well-funded enough to keep students and faculty equipped with all those tools we now consider critical? Would they become residential in order to give everyone the tools they need? Would universities become neighborhoods of their own? While I want to highlight all these challenges, I expect they will all be solved problems recorded in history books by 2515. 500 years is a pretty long time for humans, so I would expect we'd found a way to work through all these questions and come up with even more spectacular answers. What kind of content do you think would dominate the world in 2515? Books? E-books? Tweets? Blog posts? I don't have any doubt that the book, the novel, let's say, even the monograph, will still be around as a concept, regardless of its physical form. In spite of things like Twitter, I don't think anyone feels that the need for long-form thought and argument is any less necessary now than it was in the past. I would expect to see books get longer, actually. 1,000-page books might be the norm, easily. If you look around, you'll see precious few thin books on shelves at the bookstore. Word processing has made it easier to write really long books and still edit and share them prior to print publication. I expect our interfaces will only get easier and easier to use, resulting in longer and longer books. But I would expect the publishing industry to collapse. There is too much creation, independent novels and artists, to sustain it in its present form. We don't need a publishing industry to publish and distribute, so these would cease to be key elements of the industry. However, in spite of the fact that our cities are coated with graffiti, we still go to art galleries. The publishing industry would die but be reborn, potentially as a refining service or as a referral and recommendation service. With all creation tools and all information so easy to find and to generate, the value third parties like so-called publishers can bring is advice, support, networks, and recommendations. These are crucial and probably lucrative roles. It would be the publishing industry, but with the actual publishing and distribution part excised. Human minds seem to be nourished by stories. That's been true for longer than 500 years, more like 3,000, identifiably. So I don't imagine our need for stories and constructed narratives, both fiction and nonfiction, will vanish. Maybe that need will only increase, particularly because I think a turn will come where the values built into the humanities will rise. That sounds a little bit crazy because right now funding in the humanities is in crisis across all of North America. But the more seamless our technologies get, the more story and metaphor become the crucial factor in adoption and use. You can have all the technology in the world, but until the imaginative capacity is there to alter your culture to account for its use, to make sense of it, to give it a metaphorical home, you don't progress as a culture. Those innovations aren't adopted or understood without a basic metaphorical grip. Everything needs to be put in context, and that context and story comes from the skills built in the humanities. We may have forgotten that now, but we will surely remember. Technology can be a cultural driver, but you need story-inclined minds to make sense of it enough for the culture to absorb it in a rational way. That tendency is getting more obvious now, and it will probably become even more clear in future. Thought leaders, or call them sense makers, will need to have technical skills, of course, in the same way that dancers need to know how to walk. In 500 years, I would expect that we live in a more deliberately metaphorical and ideas-driven world, the kind of world we had 500 years ago, in fact. The extreme scientific and quantitative focus is, in my opinion, likely a short-term blip spurred on by a long industrial revolution. It will have tapered off long before we reach 2515. That doesn't mean that technological innovation stops, or that scientific research becomes less important or useful. only that its dominance as the only thing understood to be leading us forward will cease. Ideas and imagination of all kinds are our most valuable assets, and I think we as a culture will increasingly remember that fact. If we see our current level of internet content creation as a baseline, I would expect in 500 years that everyone creates and consumes user-generated content in some manner. In the future, everyone will be an artist, or a novelist, or a poet, or a digital graffiti artist, or pathmaker. As the need for specific technical skills vanish in favor of user-friendly interfaces, more and more people can enter into artistic realms. For instance, it takes tremendous knowledge, skill, and finances to build, say, a bridge or a building. With virtual tools, I can build a building or a bridge anytime I want, using building blocks and expanses of virtual space. For someone with no skills in architecture, I can still spend hours creating buildings. But the virtual is different, right? I would expect that divide to crumble, especially once we determine how to manage a sustainable computing culture. Without the plastics, maybe we would be forced to take the next step and leave these clunky interfaces altogether. At the Internet Librarian Conference, one of the keynotes suggested that institutions would all become curators to screens. Either we provide screens, or people bring their own into our space. But we are all about catering to screens. I think in 500 years there will be no more screens. There will be only content, untethered and unmediated. I don't know how this happens. It's hard to imagine and it sounds impossible, but again, put yourself in Gutenberg's shoes or in Martin Luther's shoes and try to imagine the 21st century. I don't know how we'll do it, but I feel sure we probably will. I doubt it's an implant, because that's so invasive and it sounds unpleasant. But I wouldn't be surprised if we use our biological knowledge to create some sort of virus or bacteria that will turn our optical and sensory nervous system into a kind of receptive terminal that interfaces with systems full of data we create. The interface is built into you, and the systems react to you. It's not about building screens or touch interface walls. The wireless data exists. Your biology interacts with it and shows you the information. We can rebuild our view of the world at will. We can choose our filters and how things appear. We can build impossible skylines, share our creations with each other, all without a single keyboard or mouse or screen. If you've touched an iPhone or an iPad, you've experienced what it's like for a system to respond to the movement of your fingers. Now imagine that without the screen. I would expect our future to be overlaid not just with the kinds of information we now have access to, all the reference sources and the GPS data and images, but with whole other levels of creation piled into the physical space itself. What we think of now as impossible volumes of data will be laughably quaint. You can see the beginnings of how this would happen with collaborative geotagging and GPS and 3G and crowdsourcing. I think what we have now is the thinnest base level of where it will go. There will be no more sitting at a desk in front of a computer. The idea of a computer will be something children will have to go to museums to understand. It's so abstract, moving a mouse and making the drawing of a hand move. Their experience will be ever so much more hands-on and immediate. What we think of as the internet would inform us instantly all the time, without us ever being deliberately aware of it. We'd communicate with it by shifting ourselves through space, not by forcing ourselves into one seat, gripping a device, and using a set of tools. I imagine we would return to physical objects, like a telephone handset or a typewriter, as cues and indicators. Touch this, hold it this way, and the system responds to you. the difference between software and physical objects would become invisible. Demonstrated intent is the way you launch an application. Actually, the concept of launching an application would probably vanish. You don't think about each muscle that moves as you shift one leg and then the other forward to walk. You just go for a walk. It just happens, seamlessly, without your specific conscious instruction. We have touchscreens and gestures that sense your intent through your fingers. The future will do away with the glass and plastic in your hand. By the time we adjust to a world with different energy sources and radically different economic models, with massive user-generated content of all kinds, search is long dead. Context is what people need. Libraries, then, would act as filters. In some ways, I think libraries can become totally ubiquitous civic services, providing support to neighborhoods by filtering content based on where their patrons are at any given time. Rather than typing a search term, you would shift your physical self into a space that indicates the content you're looking for. For instance, in a university, you might go to the history department to begin looking for historical material. You might move forward toward a particular office to get closer to certain kinds of information, and that information is constantly refined by the person behind that door. Better yet, we take that universe of information and put it in a room, perhaps call it a library, where your shifting motion helps flip between topics and refine your process. Right now, knowledge classification systems like the Dewey Decimal System and the Library of Congress classification system are a bit antiquated and increasingly less useful in a keyword-driven environment. I would expect their usefulness to actually return in the future, because where you go in your physical library would filter the content you see. This is exactly what the library was meant to be from the start, a single repository of all information ordered in a way that makes sense and progresses thematically, helping you discover new ideas and new content in a logical and natural way. In this future, that single repository would be dynamic, fundamentally cloud-based and terminal-free. Book-free, probably. Virtual, but highly physical. Once again, your university library would become a global playhouse, granting students and faculty access to the entire world of information from the beginning to the present day in a deceptively simple interface. An interface that's different for each person, depending on who they are and what they need. A librarian in this future would be a refiner of content rather than a content selector. We would work with faculty and students to create roles that shift and interconnect based on a huge series of variables, and help individuals to create the library in the image they need based on who they are today, and help that role to shift and change along with them. And we help take information about others and apply it in interesting ways. That information might be anonymized, or not. There would probably be considerable prestige in being a good filter. It might figure into a tenure review, if tenure still exists in 500 years. We would each become a constantly shifting collection of contexts, switchable, alterable, reorderable on the fly. There would be much more available information created by many more people, but it would be so easy to sift through it all that the idea of searching would be almost unthinkable. In the days when long-distance travel becomes prohibitively expensive, we might make our universities into communication hubs, creating spaces where our faculty and students can interact with others at a distance, but still have the feeling that they're sharing physical space. Your campus could become a local venue for every academic conference. We could foster community both locally and globally. You would probably attend a lot more conferences than ever before, interact more, share more. Your library would archive not just the papers, but the experience of the conference for others to revisit. We might take over the so-called publishing and distribution side of academic communication altogether, fostering academic sharing in more ways than one. Once long-distance travel becomes easy again, as it probably would with time and new renewable fuels, many might still prefer the campus as a communication hub. And attending virtually might become the new old-school way to interact with a conference. Surely conferences would become far more frequent and easy to attend. Conference papers might overtake journal articles as the primary means for presenting research and for vetting it. And libraries would present each of these bits of information as though they are individual items in our collection, with peer review and context, among 1,000 other variables, modifying how prominent they are in your stroll through the library. It's awfully hard to predict the future. Doing so probably says more about our ideas and values today than anything else. Science fiction has always reflected its time. What do you think 2515 will look like? That's it for this episode. Questions? Thoughts? Send me a comment at the bottom of this podcast's page at universityaffairs.ca. Until next time, I'm Rochelle Mazar.